What is going on, everybody? Welcome to the Warrior Soul Podcast. This is Chris Albert, and I'm joined today with my friend Matt Coopity Coop Cooper from Evo Biologics. And we're going to be talking about a really, really important subject today, and that's how to deal with fear and stress. We're going to be talking about dealing with those things as a human being, and of course, as a veteran and as an athlete. And Matt has written extensively about this and trained many professional athletes. But it's also a really timely thing because President Trump recently, during the State of the Union address, he talked about the right to try and the right to try for patients, the right to try for terminally ill patients, you know, to seek alternative treatments that could help them in their state. And we as veterans have been dealing with a disease that has shown to be terminal. It's not labeled as a terminal disease, but namely depression and post-traumatic stress. So, you know, it's interesting to think about what the government's going to do about that. We're going to talk a little bit about that more in the podcast. But first, I got to talk to you about our sponsor, F-Bomb Nutrition, amazing company run by absolutely awesome people. They do everything they can to support the show and to support veterans. They're very passionate about supporting veteran issues. What do? They make delicious portable packets of fat, but not just fat. I'm talking about like delicious macadamia nut butter. Like if you like macadamia nuts, you're going to love macadamia nut butter. And they mix it up with coconut butter. They have got one that's mixed up with chocolate, one that's mixed up with sea salt. They've also got other fat packets like coconut oil and olive oil and avocado oil. And I'm always talking about the benefits of a high fat diet, but if you're interested in doing one, it's not always easy to get good fat sources out there on the road. So if you are tantalized by the notion of awesome macadamia nut butter in your face, in your mouth, not any nut butter in your face, but macadamia nut butter in your face, then, you can check them out at www.dropanfbomb.com and use the code WARRIORSOUL and you'll get 20% off of your first order.
This is Chris Albert, and I'm here to remind you of one thing. Someday, you're going to die. Now, that's not some morbid statement or scary idea. It's solid fact. Your time here on this earth is limited. And we need to be reminded of this as much as possible for one simple reason: to live your best life while you can. This is the Warrior Soul Podcast.
Did that sound good, Matt? Are you interested in some macadamia nut butter?
Only if it's tantalizing and in my face.
Awesome. Awesome. Anyways, so we've got some pretty serious material here. And, you know, Matt wrote an article about this a few weeks ago, but all of us deal with fear and anxiety. And it's been something that's been in the human psyche for, you know, probably since we've, you know, first stepped on this planet. We always had to deal with things that we needed to fear, and it we have it for a reason, because it helped our survival at one point. But in today's world, a lot of the things we carry over, they're very different, right? They're in a very different setting. And a lot of us aren't being chased by saber-toothed tigers all the time anymore, but we're being chased by metaphorical tigers, you know, through email, through increased connection with the world, through social media, through things our boss wants us to do. We've got, you know, different levels of fear here. We've got people who are suffering from terminally ill diseases. We've got veterans who are dealing with depression and people who are dealing with depression and post-traumatic stress. And then we've got people trying to perform under the thumb of anxiety and fear. Matt, where should we start with this issue? Because it's a huge issue. What should we start this conversation with?
Yeah, that's a great question. Because I know we're going to cover a lot today. The one thing I'm going to start with personally, for a shameless plug, is that Evo Biologics is the old business name. The new one is 12 AM Labs. So it's 12amlabs.com. So A, how dare you? B, I had to clarify that.
You can still find it if you Google for Evo Biologics, right? But
yeah, Google still reads it as that. So you could, yeah, it forwards to the new one. But yeah, so at any rate, I'm with 12AM Labs. I'm also with a company called Fast Twitch in Los Angeles. That's where I train everyday people and athletes, and actually hopefully going to be doing some work with gang rehabilitation there, doing some of this. But I think the most important place to start with all of these things is just the nervous system. And so the reason I'm saying that is because all of these things that relate to it, whether it's the effects of trauma on the body, and specifically today, how we're going to talk about getting rid of that and stress and anxiety, but also it ties into performance and athletic training. It ties into your overall physiological health, and it even ties into the role of these plant medicines, psychedelics, and other items that reprogram the mind-body interface.
So, you know, when we're talking about the effects of fear and the effects of anxiety and the effects of just stress in general, what kind of things can happen to a human being with an abundance of stress, with abundant, when these things become chronic?
Yeah. So the short back of the box version is going to be that you can destroy your health. You can cripple your health. You could feel like shit. You know, you can have a very bad quality of life. And if you're somebody who's in a fitness or you're an athlete trying to perform, it can actually destroy your performance, especially when they talk about the mental game. That's usually what they're talking about. Now, what happens with that is that you're in a state that most of us have heard called fight or flight. And that's a evolutionarily programmed defense mechanism. And so we need that for real danger. It also is fine to get activated when you exercise. That's when it's meant to get activated. But the reality is that a lot of us live in a chronic state of fight or flight because we have too much life stress. We might have some undealt with emotional trauma, whether it's PTSD, something as simple as getting picked last on the playground, you know, getting molested, things like that. So everybody has something, you know, whether you know it or not. And you can create this now by just, even if you, as an adult, with kind of more advanced emotional equipment, if you will. By, right, like perceived stress, work, email, whatever. So in a nutshell, your body doesn't know the difference between these things and if there's a 300-pound tiger chasing you. So if that's the case and you're in fight or flight, all of your body's energy from a cellular level, basically from the mitochondria, which is the little energy batteries of our cells, that gets allocated towards being alert and being on defense because ultimately, your body and your brain are going to do their best to protect you, right? And so from there, everything else from hormones to detoxification to neurons, athletic performance, neurotransmitters and brain chemistry, all these things sort of get put on the back burner, biologically speaking, just to keep it simple. And then from there, what ends up happening is because all of that cellular energy is allocated on defense and is basically creating and being borrowed from these other secondary areas, you can have people who just shut down various aspects of their health. And so even like in Western medicine, we all know they kind of just try to band-aid the symptoms, but even in functional medicine, you can't even really fully sing their praises because you'll hear people talking about things like adrenal fatigue or chasing the thyroid hormone or going down the pipeline of just the gut. But the reality is that the one common denominator between all of these is that they're fueled by cellular energy from the mitochondria. And so in most cases, like, yeah, there's definitely individual things that we need to do to get some of these health systems back online. But the one thing we can do to support them all is A, just dealing with our shit, which is what we're going to talk about today. And then B, also just on a hard science level, supporting the health of the mitochondria.
Yeah. You know, when I deal with clients, I just like you, I look into their background. I look into their work life. I look into their family life. I look into different things they're feeling, how they're sleeping, all of these different things. And I've been working with a lot of high performing clients lately. So guys who are controlling millions of dollars, guys who are CEOs of companies, people who have a lot of other people depending on them. And in all of these cases that I'm finding, you know, these guys are burning the candle at both ends. So they're not sleeping and they are surviving on limited calories, and they are constantly working, constantly in front of a screen, constantly trying to figure things out and constantly dealing with issues. And, you know, you have to think that for a good portion of human history, life was really fucking hard. I mean, like, we were dealing with dangers on a daily basis. Life was under threat every single day. But in some ways, we knew better back then that in order for us to survive, we had to take some time and rest. We had to take some time and heal before we went out again on the hunt and put ourselves in danger of being mauled to death by a saber-toothed tiger. But in today's world, we've got so much like literal comfort around us that I think a lot of people forget to turn it off. They forget to take the period of time to relax.
Yeah, absolutely. I think when you look at animals or our ancestors, to the best of what we know, their stress levels look like a heartbeat monitor in a way, and that there was like just sort of nothing and we're chilling. And then there's this like 10 out of 10 on the stress level when there is an actual danger. But that's kind of how we're meant to be wired, right? There's a great book called Why Zebras Don't Get Ulcers that elucidates on this. But we are meant to have a 10 out of 10 or 8 out of 10 or whatever stress level when we're dealing with something, like when we're exercising or when we're truly in danger. And then it's meant to go down to like zero. But we kind of have this perpetually elevated 3 to 6 out of 10. I mean, that's just metaphorically speaking, level of alertness that we're always dealing with. And so one thing that I do like about Eastern medicine and in some of the Asian cultures, they'll talk about how stress, whether that's, you know, literal life stress, trauma, you know, or as they call it, the human experience and the spirit, does coincide, issues there do coincide with health issues. Now, what's cool is that for people who like it or just refuse to go on the woo side of things, Western medicine is really beginning to, and biohackers are really beginning to find the biological mechanisms behind this, which is fucking awesome. Because when just like you, when I'm working with somebody, I might take an Eastern school of thought where just to get them results and ultimately get them feeling better quicker, it is important to be directionally accurate. And, you know, instead of just changing one thing, you know, like if we're going to really help them, we need to take a full systems approach and look at diet, sleep, stress management, you know, fitness, movement, all those things and more. But from there, what we can do is, let's say you're in Eastern medicine, you would throw 6 things at a person and maybe 4 of them work, but hey, at least they get results. But now that we have an understanding behind the mechanisms, we can be even more precise in our interventions for both health, fitness, performance, and stress and trauma management, which is really cool. One book that I quote the shit out of is The Body Keeps the Score. And so if anybody wants to really, really see a lot of this stuff and what I'm talking about and how there is a tangible effect on the body, I would read that. I'm an old school guy. I like hard copy books, but in this case, the spoken word is super powerful. So I would get it on your audiobook, like Audible or your audiobook delivery service of choice. Another one too, just while we're at it, man, a lot of people might find that their behavioral patterns are similar to their parents, especially ones that they don't like, and or they might have some sort of irrational phobias that they don't really feel are their own. So there's a really, really important segment of research coming out called transgenerational inherited emotional traumas. And so the segment of the human genome that was previously referred to as junk DNA is really not junk DNA at all. It's actually, I don't know DNA, or we don't know DNA. And so the things that we're learning about that's encoded in there are actually aspects of who we are, personality, things like that. And so there is a ton of research established and forthcoming as far as the forecast goes about how we can inherit these behavioral patterns from previous generations. So, you know, I'll just own my own shit and be vulnerable. Like at one point in my life, I like almost behaved as if I had been in a very, very scarcity kind of environment. When the reality is I was born in a, you know, nice, normal, middle-class family, had a great childhood. But looking at my lineage, my parents came from parents, so my grandparents, they really experienced the Great Depression. They were in the thick of it. And so it's almost like, you know, my parents worked government jobs for 30 years and called it a day. And so I'm really breaking that mold by challenging myself and being an entrepreneur, really. And so what I hope my story can do is help people understand that, like, sometimes you have to own your own shit. Other times you have to kind of acknowledge it and realize that it's coming from someplace else in your family. A lot of people might have that with like regards to how they view and perceive sexuality, with regards to maybe somebody else in their family was molested or something like that, or raped, and they're sort of left with those wounds. I think the easiest example that's been researched is how descendants of Holocaust victims are actually like, there's a shockingly high correlation with irrational phobias of fire and claustrophobia.
Oh, really? That's that's really interesting that it could translate over just through DNA. That's amazing.
Dude, one thing just before, just to close that loop, and I realize I'm interrupting you, so I'm sorry, but
that's okay.
There's also nurture too. So there is like, you know, there is the reality that somebody who did have their story, their written story and nervous system and human experience sort of unfortunately tattooed with one of these, they might also, you know, play a role in that and how they raise you. I'm not discounting that. It's definitely a both thing. It's not one or the other. In most cases, it's both.
Yeah. I wanted to circle back and ask you about that scarcity, the notion of scarcity. What do you mean by that? What were you acting like?
So I've always been somebody, again, just to be vulnerable and own my own shit, I've always sort of been a logical left brain guy. When I started out, my family, I was baptized, you know, I was fucking dunked, but I only went to church for weddings and funerals. I don't come from anybody like on the woo side of things or anything like that. So I'm come from like a very logical left brain family. And I just noticed that once I became more mature and self-aware and checked in with myself, I'm like, man, you really over worry and stress about a lot of things that are like that isn't you, you know? And also you've worked hard, you've had struggles, assuredly, but on paper, you're not coming from a scarcity background. You know, you didn't have to worry about when food is going to be on the table, like not like that. However, you do tend to like worry about that, worry about things in your life to that degree. And, you know, you tend to choose safety over risk. And so once I identified that, I began to research this. And that's just, you know, they say most research is me search. And that was the case for me. And so that eventually led me to where I'm at here. But you know, it's still a struggle. You know, I'm not speaking from a point of a soapbox. I'm speaking from the trenches. And I hope everybody listening realizes that, you know, I still have my days. In fact, I dealt with both these things again recently. You know, you think you learned your lesson on it, but time is a flat circle. I think we're kind of condemned to learn and repeat the same lessons the hard way until we really learn them and rise out of them. But basically, I spent like a year getting burnt out, really like shifting into running my own business and not doing like a day job and doing a hybrid entrepreneurship thing where I was trying to do both. And so I overworked myself and burnt myself out. And then, so I was dealing with some of that cellular energy deficit stuff, and it also bred more stress and anxiety, right? And then from there, it not only culminated in a few health issues, but on top of that too, I just sort of realized, like, hey, you know, you are kind of living out of fear, and because that's what stress, anxiety, scarcity all traces back to is fear. And I'm like, you know, that's really not you. So just being self-aware, I've been able to run with that. And when it's kicking in, just kind of be aware of it and then make the decision I know is right for me in spite of that, which is, you know, it still can be fucking terrifying, you know?
Yeah. No, I've definitely been there. As far as the entrepreneurial journey, for one, is crazy, because you hear about all these guys, they're making millions of dollars on the internet, right? And they're out here, they're, you know, you see the ads, make millions of dollars using Facebook ads, or, you know, make millions of dollars doing your online course. But the entrepreneurial journey is hard. It's really hard. And a lot of times, especially at the beginning, you know, you are in a constant state of fear. You're in that constant state of wondering where the hell your next meal is going to come from, where the hell your next dollar is going to come from, whether you start to question everything about yourself, whether or not you were good enough to even try this in the first place. And, you know, there's so many people I know who are in that state. The question, I think, for people who are dealing with that and dealing with, you know, just life in general is, well, what do you do when you feel that fear? Because it's going to happen. It's not like you could just say, oh, that fear, that's irrational. I have a saying, I say fear is a liar, and it is a liar, but it's a damn good liar, right? It's a damn good liar. And it will trick you into believing that, you know, you're completely in danger, and that you're a complete failure, and that, you know, your DNA isn't even worth procreating on this earth. So what do we do when we get to that point? How do we deal with it?
Right. So I will say it's a quilt. You gotta build your own quilt. And so the things that I'm saying, it's not like, I'm not trying to give everyone a list of things to do. I'm just giving them a list of things to try. These are meant to be N=1 experiments that you try with yourself and then see what works. So I'll just sort of give you the rundown for what I do and what I recommend to clients. But some sort of mindfulness practice and meditation helps a ton. But you have to remember that meditation isn't about getting to a higher plane. It's more about letting go. And that's another book that I would check out too. It's called Letting Go by, I believe it's Hawkins or Dawkins. I should know that, but that's really what it's about. And it's about being present and feeling your body. It's actually about doing less, not about doing more. And I think that's where a lot of people struggle with it. So again, I don't come from a family on the woo side of things. So I just started by doing free meditation apps. I'm leaning now towards learning transcendental meditation because people like, you know, Jim Carrey, Jerry Seinfeld, people like that. A lot of people who live blessed lives try it. And so I figured, you know, why not? I'll give it a shot and use that as the next evolution in my mental training. And then period, as I, you know, I'm a trainer and strength and conditioning coach. So periodizing that, just like I would a program for one of my athletes. But yeah, just start with the free apps and then see what happens from there. Set an alarm and do it for 15, 20 minutes, ideally twice a day, but at least in the morning. So another thing you could do is, we'll leave psychedelics and drugs for last because that'll be the most controversial. But honestly, breath work is killer. So most people actually chronically either mouth breathe or they over breathe. And by that, I mean, they take a huge deep breath in, like, and then blow it out. So you're meant to breathe into your belly, but a lot of people don't realize, whether it's athletic performance or in times of like stress and trauma, you don't want to under or over breathe. And so you want to actually maximize a little bit more CO2 in your system so you can tolerate higher levels of CO2. So part of that, like, panicky, need this to end kind of state that happens when somebody's training and doing like heavy conditioning or doing like a long duration isometric hold, like a wall sit or something like that. It's actually the body sort of giving a fight or flight response off to elevated levels of CO2. And this dates back to when we're babies, the very first time we get stuffed up, we have this freak out moment where we can't breathe. And so then we breathe out of our mouth. And so that's why that natural reflex kicks in on a neurological level when we're panicked like that and have elevated levels of CO2 and or breathe in our mouth. So basically, you don't want to breathe through your mouth at all because it ignites your fight or flight reflex even more. You want to keep it to nasal breathing, and you want the exhale to be longer than the inhale. Now, credit where credit's due, Huberman Lab, Brian McKenzie, and Patrick McKeon, who wrote The Oxygen Advantage, they're doing the coolest things as far as just pure breath work space. I just integrate these protocols when I'm working with people too. So I'm definitely standing on the shoulders of giants here. But honestly, just breathing and focusing on your breathing makes you just more present and in your body. And oftentimes I find that that will be enough to calm fear, anxiety, stress, or, you know, kill the fight or flight reflex during athletic performance. Now, moving on from that, something that I love doing, and this isn't so much an in the moment thing. This is more like you got to do this just like you would, you know, a training regimen. But something I do for people when I'm putting together a program is if they are stressed or they have some shit in their past, which is most of us, I will integrate something called trauma release exercises, or TRE. And again, I'm not the inventor of these. Actually, Dr. David Bercelli is, and I don't even know technically if he's the originator of them, because mammals do this on their own. Right? Like there's videos of polar bears online and other mammals actually undergoing tremors, and animals can do it automatically, but us humans, we can't. So it's a series of exercises that actually causes involuntary, what you call neurogenic tremors. And it's targeted at the psoas and pelvis area. But from there, it actually leads up your spinal column, which is that interface of where your nerves come down from the brain and also provide feedback from your proprioceptors, you know, Golgi tendon organs, muscle spindles, basically just parts of the body that send and receive information to and from the spinal cord and brain. And so when we do this, we can actually cleanse out and detox some of the physiological effects of how stress, anxiety, and fear truly reprogram our nervous system and cause tension in there. And so in doing this, I usually have people do a protocol of these like twice a week, depending on the severity, for like, you know, 3 months. And credit to that, you know, originating, like me being turned onto this and that protocol from my friend Ryan of Cosmic Animal. But
is there a video of any of this stuff around or anything?
So here's the thing. There are videos of some of them, but they're very, very heavily protected because the guy, you know, Dr. David Bercelli, he has a certification course around it. So you're probably looking at going to one of his practitioners if you just want to do that work. I actually have videos of this that I will integrate for my clients into their programs. So if anybody does want access to that, just tell it. We'll put up my contact information at the end, or if they have any questions on anything in the interview for that matter. But out of respect to him and some of that stuff, work-wise, I probably will post that.
I'll get that up in the show notes. I want to talk a little bit more about the breath work, because that's something that's free and something that's available to people. And I know we're going to be getting into plant medicines a little bit later on, but you know, the thing is, plant medicines, I'm totally in favor of them. I'm totally in favor of their use. We're in a place right now that, you know, even though President Trump, talked about the right to try, a lot of people who could benefit from plant medicines aren't going to be able to get in touch with them legally. And those of us who, you know, don't necessarily want to join a church and drink ayahuasca or things like that, I think that breath work is a really great way to start, or at least gain access to some of these states where you can, you know, put fear and anxiety and stress to the side. And I've had both Brian McKenzie and Patrick McKeown on. I've also had Scott Carney on here, and he spoke extensively about the Wim Hof method. You know, each of I think what Brian's doing is really, really interesting, because Brian's work is really integrating a lot of these disparate breathing techniques that are out there, where, you know, you've got Wim Hof breathing, which is very different than the Buteyko method that, that Patrick McKeown is talking about. So, how can people start to try to integrate breath work into their routines, and how do you do that for your clients?
So, right. So one thing I should say, actually, just to close the previous loop, is the, that article that you read that initially inspired this podcast that I wrote about, you know, combining soul and sport and the nervous system and how I use it for athletic training, but also helping people with health, stress, trauma. There is a link to videos in that for the trauma release exercises. I'm not the one doing it in that case, and those aren't all the ones that I would do, but that is a good one. Also, there's some various eye resets you can do. And so when you do get stressed and have anxiety, a lot of times you almost like find like you're sort of like looking around, looking at distractions, feel like you can't manage everything, and you kind of are locked in tunnel vision. And that's a natural element of fight or flight. But ideally, you want to be more in flow. And part of that, to give it a contextual scientific definition, that means having expanding to peripheral vision. And so EMDR stands for eye movement desensitization and reprogramming. And so there are various eye exercises you can do to re-expand that area. And what I also like about this and trauma release exercises are that you really don't have to know what exactly that trauma is. You don't necessarily have to revisit it in order to get benefit from it, because it chases these ghosts in the machine out of your body. And so the reality is that with this kind of work, it's nice because some people just A, don't know what this is, or B, they might really not want to revisit it, especially some of your listeners who might have PTSD or think that they might have some shit getting kicked up as they hear me talk about
it. Yeah.
But as far as breath work, that also can help you alter that. The, you know, again, your breathing is like the remote control to your body, in that it interacts with your nervous system, and that ultimately is going to interact with your state. And so when you can shift states, you can be in the presence of danger, or whether it's what your body perceives as danger, like stress, or even exercise, if we're talking about athletes. And by changing our breath work, we can make ourselves be comfortable in these states. And so a lot of times, you know, people talk about how animals can sense fear and stuff like that. And that's ultimately the biggest thing that's going to decide whether you're going to get eaten by a shark or a bear, or whether they're kind of maybe just going to kind of notice you and move on. A lot of that is how you behave. And if you can't control that, you probably are going to freak out the animal too. And so obviously, like, this is just an example. It's not the contextual priority for most people. But yeah, breathing is important for that, because you're going to change your state. And so even if you have the worst of circumstances, you're still going to have that emotional response. We're not logically doing some BS like spiritual bypassing, but what we're doing is just allowing you to be present and be in that state and know ultimately there. It's like, you know, to use the words of Eckhart Tolle, it's like, suffering can't really exist in the now. And so it pulls you out of making your mind be in the past or in the future.
Yeah. And, you know, just having practiced a few of these things, it's amazing what breath work can do. Like with the Wim Hof method, you can get high as balls just by your own breath. Now, I'm not recommending that people do this without supervision or anything like that. And I'm definitely not recommending doing something like this every day, because you can get addicted to this just like you can any other drug. But I think people forget that a lot of the drugs we're being given, a lot of the things we're being prescribed, they already exist in our bodies. We just got to release them. And I think that breath work provides a really good way of doing that. With Patrick McKeown's method, I really like the way he goes about things, and I've been a lot more conscious of nasal breathing, and especially when I'm heading to bed and going to sleep. That's a big thing for me, is making sure that I'm nasal breathing. And you know, for anybody who's really interested in that stuff, one, I definitely suggest that you guys check out Patrick McKeown episode we did, and also the Brian McKenzie episode that we did. I'll get the links to those up on the show notes. But are you partial to one technique or another or anything like that?
I think just set and setting. I mean, Wim Hof stuff is great. That's not what I practice because I just don't have, I mean, I'll probably do like a phase where I like fully, you know, because I treat my body like a science project. I'll probably check it out a little bit more in depth, but his is actually designed to more of for at least what I understand, and I could be wrong, but enhance a little bit more of a fight or flight state and cause an adrenal response so that you can bypass unfavorable physical conditions such as ice, you know, and extreme cold, and be okay being in that state. So it, in some ways it's all related, but it's different than what, you know, Brian and Pat's work is. I'm actually more partial to those guys. And that book, if you want to check it out, would be The Oxygen Advantage. Or probably your best bet to find practical application for this is to attend one of Power Speed Endurance's Art of Breath clinics.
Art of Breath seminar.
Which our mutual friend Tony Florial of the Magic Flow Bus. He's a flow state coach in a nutshell, and does some other things too. A biohacker, which he's attended actually.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, and Brian's seminars are amazing from what I hear, and you know, both Tony and then Andrew both attended the Art of Breath seminar, and they were raving about it. They thought it was absolutely awesome. So definitely something we'll recommend. And we got the links up for that on the Brian McKenzie show notes too. One thing I wanted to mention about something you spoke about before with the movement, and that's EMDR, the eye movement. That's actually currently being practiced by the VA. And if you really wanted to get that treatment, you can actually request it from the VA. You just got to put it out there. I think the current treatments that they have right now are of course, SSRIs and SNRIs, cognitive behavioral therapy, and EMDR. EMDR is kind of like the most experimental thing that they're doing right now. And they're starting to venture down this path. So
I'll riff out on that for a second. That's amazing that they're doing that. It's funny it's experimenting because it's new for them, but the reality is this is a little bit more of a direct plug and play mechanism for our own body, our own physiology. Now, when you look at something like this too, natural processing, that's the one my friend Ryan also recommended to me, even though I'd been doing some of the various eye resets before. I like that also, not just because of it's more, you know, it's like it's more natural, and I'll get a riff out on that in a sec, but it's also just an outcome-based commodity. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like most therapies, like talk therapy, are just, you know, that you could be sitting there for years and years of like, how does that make you feel therapy? And my friends who might be listening to this will laugh because I'll always jokingly ask people that and also legitimately ask them that. How does that make you feel? But anyways, this is a way to actually truly excavate these things out of your body. Another thing that, like, you know, if you really want to like relive these things and make sure you're as cleansed as possible from them, what I have a friend named James Siegel, and also another friend named Mike Colleen, to be fair. And with these guys, they actually do something like what Tony Robbins used to focus on, which is NLP or neuro-linguistic programming. And he does it now. That's just one of many things, but this is their main thing. And they do something called timeline therapy. And that's where you essentially are quote unquote hypnotized, basically in more of a suggestive state, not like fall asleep at the fair fake kind of hypnosis. You're like really hypnotized. Mm-hmm. And they can say things to your subconscious that are trigger words, you know, neurolinguistics. And so you'll relive your whole health history timeline and go back and see what actually happened to you when you were younger, and maybe didn't have the emotional equipment to deal with some of this stuff. And everybody's got something. And then so from there, after I did that, and I've worked with both of these guys, but on timeline therapy specifically, it was with James Siegel. He's in San Diego now, but I felt like there was a big time stick removed from the bike spokes that are my subconscious. And so that helped a ton. That was just something I'd add in. As far as SSRIs and prescriptions, if prescriptions are good and then they help people and ultimately cure a lot, I am a fan. I'm not anti-Western medicine at all. But I mean, what the evidence shows, and from what I've seen and what many of you have probably seen from interacting with these people, is like, if somebody has been on one of those things, particularly for a while, like that really changes the shape of who they are.
Yeah.
And it's like they get relief from their symptoms in the short term. And so I'm not saying that they're, you know, I'm not going to cause unnecessary controversy, but when you never can get back your normal self and who you truly are, like that's when I have a fucking problem with these things. And I don't like how liberally they're distributed and how there's an itchy trigger finger for these things to be prescribed when somebody hasn't tried some of these other things, at least first. So on that note, I mean, I would also say when we talk about being in fight or flight as well, one of those downstream pools that gets its resources pulled from is neurotransmitters and brain chemistry. So instead of putting a Band-Aid effect on these things by taking the prescriptions, I am sounding controversial regardless of how many caveats I put out there and how much I try to fucking tiptoe around this shit. Anyways, that's one of the pools that gets pulled from. And you can see it I know in your case, right, when you've trained and or yourself bodybuilders and you're done overtraining and under eating, you almost are like not yourself, you're a shell of yourself right before the contest. Am I right?
Well, yeah. And anything that it changes your brain chemistry is gonna change you as a person. And people have to understand that. You know, and then the other thing is, and I'll get on my political soapbox for a second. You know, we talk about gun laws in the United States and how we need to ban guns and how we need to do this and we do that. And this might be a very controversial statement, but when we consider the mass shootings that have occurred over the past few years, in almost every case, SSRIs or SNRIs have been involved with the person who committed the shooting. Yeah. Right. So, you know, people are talking about banning guns, which I am not in favor of. I am a big supporter of the Second Amendment. Why are we not talking about banning SSRIs or SNRIs or looking deeper at this issue? I mean, and of course, what we're both saying is extremely controversial. And of course, you all need to follow the advice of your doctors. And neither Matt nor I are telling you to do that. But when your doctor does prescribe you one of these things, there's probably a good set of questions that you want to ask before you accept the prescription, right?
Yeah. And also, you know, you're in the driver's seat of your own hero's journey, and that includes your health. You know, consult with health professionals, but also like don't be afraid to ask questions and you know, seek second opinions and things like that. You know, don't be afraid to wipe your own ass, basically.
Right.
And
you got to be your own advocate.
Yeah. And I agree with you. The gun issue, I think, it's a mental health issue, because it's, you know, it's just like some of those things where somebody's driven a car through a crowd or people or things like that. It's the modality of murder is maybe there are some arguments like, yeah, you shouldn't have, you know, RPGs and stuff like that. But
Matt's got to tread a very thin line here, because he's on a veterans podcast, but he comes from the Bay Area, San Francisco. So if he goes too far in our favor, he's going to get his San Francisco card taken away.
Yeah, no, I don't entirely align with either political party for a number of reasons, but anyways, it's a mental health issue. It's a love or not love issue. It's not a gun issue. That's just sort of the, you know, the weapon of choice. It could be a car, it could be a number of other things. But anyways, before we turn this into a political podcast, what I want to loop back on is the fact that when we can re-support your cellular energy and also deal with your shit, there's a better chance that a lot of these things that can influence elements of who we are, like hormones and neuroendocrinology, you know, so neurohormones, and then also the interplay between neurotransmitters and hormones there. When you can reestablish these things, that is getting to the root cause of these issues. It's not band-aiding it with a prescription drug that's going to make somebody a shell of themselves.
Yeah, no, I'm in complete agreement with that. And, you know, since we're on the subject of drugs now, let's start to talk about some of these plant medicines that are you know, we're seeing more and more of. We're seeing more and more talk about these things. And, you know, the organization MAPS, they've been doing a lot of work on things like MDMA and treatment for PTSD, but there's a lot of people also looking at the non-synthetic drugs like the plant medicine ayahuasca. People are looking at DMT, cannabis, which has just been legalized for recreational use here in California. That's another one that people have been looking at for a while. And I think, you know, both Matt and I have experience with a number of these things. So we can talk a little bit from personal experience with these modalities. But Matt, what do plant medicines do for us? Or not just plant medicines, but maybe some of the synthetic versions like LSD or MDMA. What do those things do for us?
Yeah, so each one kind of has their own like mechanistic quality. But in a nutshell, like in context here, let me think for a second how to best say this.
Let me catch it like this. Like, why is it different from taking an SSRI? Or why is it different from something that you'd be prescribed?
Right. So the therapeutic use of a lot of these quote-unquote drugs or plant medicines, they actually will help us in more of a natural way and make us like naturally, like endogenously, meaning within our own body, produce more of these neurotransmitters and help the nervous system health, brain health, and essentially even us out like that, with the ultimate goal being that you don't have to do them forever, right? Which that's real medicine right there. It's not putting a Band-Aid on something and saying, hey, you have to take this forever. Like as a concept, medicine, whether you're something as simple as taking a holistic supplement all the way to taking a prescription drug or doing like even the physical stuff like physical therapy, rehabilitation, it's meant to be a temporary thing. And so these things provide a holistic way or even like, you know, a certain case, like appropriate sort of lab made things like MDMA therapy, way to get you back into the right state and to shift states. And so you can use them in a number of ways, right? Like, I can't talk about it too much yet, but I'm going to be doing a collaboration project with some of the guys branched out from MAPS, or the Multidisciplinary Association for Psychedelic Studies, and some of the guys at the Third Wave, to basically create this sort of self-optimization and health and fitness optimization program, because nobody also has really studied the effects of these things on strength and conditioning and athletic performance, even though there's a ton of empirical evidence that these things really, really do make a dent in those areas. So basically, you can take things like this in a microdose where you don't feel them, but you take a little bit. There's various protocols, like once every 4 days is the most popular. For example, people take like psilocybin mushrooms, maybe 0.3 to 0.5 grams once every 4 days. That's the most common protocol for like 12 weeks, give or take. And then even though you don't feel it, and so you don't feel the effects of shrooms like you would if you took a full macro dose, you notice that you're more in a flow state. Your social interactions are more clear and better. You're really more talking to people instead of talking at them. You're acting less out of fear. The effects of fear, anxiety, stress on the body tend to be mitigated and marginalized. You're able to get more present and be in your body. These are some of the effects that you'll notice when you take the micro doses. And so when you take a macro dose, that's something more like ayahuasca or a traditional shroom or DMT journey. And that's where you're taking enough to trip out. Here's where I do and don't have a problem with anything we've talked about today. Your relationship to the drug itself is ultimately what's going to decide whether it's therapeutic or irresponsible. if you're using it for a for a particular outcome, and you're able to discontinue from it and carry on living your life without relying on it, then I think you're doing it right. But if you're doing it as a crutch to not deal with things, then that's where I have a problem with it. You know, I have done ayahuasca before, I've done the retreat, but where I really think there's benefit in here is after you do that, it's almost like a substitute for a rite of passage in a society where we do not have them. You know, our rites of passage are bullshit, like getting your car keys. And part of why we're depressed is because we ultimately have these rites of passage in the hero's journey. But, you know, if you want to look up Joseph Campbell monomyths, the hero's journey, we all kind of need to live that out in our life. And so in society now, we're getting people who aren't always living out the true hero's journey, and it's very stifled. And then we're also constantly reminded in movies and books of the hero's journey and these rites of passage that we then don't get to have, which is also depressing. So what plant medicine can be is a substitute for rites of passage in a society that is absent of them. And so when you think of a rite of passage, you think of the previous generation interacting with the current upcoming generation, and the upcoming generation is doing their work or trials and tribulations and interacting and learning from the previous generation. And then it's almost like a gateway, you know, and it might be tough, but you're ultimately better for it. In fact, the name of your company, Agoji, that is a rite of passage. Mm-hmm. And this is also why a lot of people move away for college, live outside the nest. I mean, this doesn't have to be some crazy, weird pilgrimage, but really what ayahuasca was for me and what it's meant to be, I think, my personal opinion, is a substitute for a rite of passage by which people, you're interacting with people and they're seeing you go through these things. And ideally you're sharing what you're going through with them and just truly owning your shit. And then when you're done, the onus is on you to integrate these things into your life and to really create real change from these things. And if you need it in the future to, you know, as a consultant, you can go back to ayahuasca or macro shroom trips or whatever. But if you're relying on it over and over as an escape safety valve, like, I don't think that's cool. So that's my big time caveat. I mean, I'm an advocate for these things when used right. And so I want to cut that part right there just to see what you think before I go into maybe some of the cool, like, athletic performance elements with this.
Yeah, there's a few things here. I mean, number one, I think that proper guidance is absolutely necessary. If you have not been exposed to these things before and you do not know their power, you do not want to take a heroic dose of mushrooms to have a fun Saturday night. Like, it's not going to be fun, and you're not going to be in a good place, right? And similarly for ayahuasca or DMT, MDMA, of course, is something that's a little bit more social, right? It's also, you know, you also a lot of times don't know what you're getting if you're getting it from a drug dealer or somebody, something like that. So, you know, again, I want to emphasize safety here. I want to emphasize that the drugs are tools. They're not therapy. They're not the work that you need to do, right? They're tools to get there. And so I think that anybody going about this, and if you're serious about it, you should be going about it the proper way. And I will tell you that if you do make the mistake of trying to take a heroic dose of mushrooms or doing ayahuasca in a social setting or doing DMT even in a social setting, you will never make that mistake again. And you'll probably have a much different idea of what drugs are and what they should be, right?
Yeah. And that's partially because for those of you who haven't done these things, they were originally like meant like this. And there's even evidence dating back to the ancient Greeks of how they were used. And also, you know, the Native Americans are pretty famous as well for having these sort of spiritual experiences using plant medicine as a desired modality. But
well, even Christianity, they say that the burning bush was, there's a theory that it was an acacia bush which is loaded with dimethyltryptamine. And there's a theory that Moses was inhaling the acacia bush and then talking to God through DMT.
Yeah, I haven't read that anecdotally, but I believe it. I mean, there's stories of this in many a culture, and so what you're gonna experience if you do these things is every limiting belief, every element of your shadow self gets thrown, and just like Emerald putting a fucking ingredient, just like bam, right in the recipe. Like instead of that, you just sort of like ostrich yourself from during the day, it gets thrown right in your face. And that's fucking scary for a lot of people. But there's freedom in acknowledging it and being able to let go. And it allows you to kind of just walk through life, always owning your truths. And ultimately, when you do that, no one can touch you. And it might be the triggering mechanism where you realize, like, I do need to have that difficult conversation with that person in my life who's holding me back, or it's your fault, the person you're letting hold you back. It might make you less afraid of what other people think when you do something. Like, a lot of people don't want to start that business that they've always wanted to start, or quit that, you know, job, or even do bigger things, like question the idea of the American dream and look at, like, all right, well, this isn't my American dream. Like, maybe I don't give a shit about the white picket fence aspect of the American dream. Maybe I'm not going to go too Brad Pitt in Fight Club here, but maybe, like, I just want something different than that. Maybe I'm more fulfilled when I'm doing all of my own work, helping people in whatever way I choose. And ultimately through that, living out my passion, like, that's my American dream. And then just trusting that things like the money, the freedom, the houses, you know, whatever it is you want around that will come with that. And I think that as a society, if we shift more towards that, there would be a lot less problems, because there'd be a lot less repressed shadow selves. In fact, there's a short story that my friend Ryan, whom I referenced earlier, turned me onto, called The Ones Who Walk Away from the Omelas. And it talks about this idealistic, utopian, futuristic society that's secretly a dystopian society in kind of a subterranean way. And there's essentially this entity, I think it's like forgot if it was like an animal or a person, I think they refer to it more as an it, that's beneath the city, and all of the city's shadow selves and sins and all the back of the mind stuff we don't want to live with day to day, it ultimately gets shunned and passed onto this thing that then has to be the carrier of all of this for this society. And so the people in this society who realize this, they then start to like walk away from it, as in the ones who walk away from the Omelas. They walk away from this science fiction, this like futuristic society that seems ideal because it's coming with consequence. And so you can pull a ton of things morally from the story. It's one of those types, but in context here, what I pulled from it for myself is, you know, you kind of have to own your own shadow. And Robert Johnson wrote a book, actually, I think it is called Own Your Own Shadow or something like that. But basically, we do all have elements of our shadow self. And instead of running from them, it's important to acknowledge them and maybe see why they're there. And maybe just be okay with them when they pop up and realize we don't need to change them, because we all have these things, whether or not we publicly admit it, you know?
Yeah. I mean, it gets back to what you said earlier, owning your own shit, right? It's funny that short story you mentioned, that's actually where the word scapegoat came from. Well, a very similar story. I mean, back in ancient Judaism, they would take a goat and they'd write out all their sins and attach these notes of paper to this goat, and then they'd cast the goat out of society, right? And that's how we got the word scapegoat. You know, they'd send it off into the wild. I'm sure the goat was really happy and just pranced off into the distance, not knowing what the fuck was going on. But, you know, we've got to own our own shit. We can't just put it all onto a scapegoat. And we've got to put the work in to solve our own issues. And, if we don't do that, if we don't own our shortcomings, if we don't understand that just because we have shortcomings doesn't mean that we're beyond fixing, then, you know, I think we're not doing the work we need to get better. And we're not doing the work we need to be our best self in today's world, at least.
Yeah. And also your own human experience is going to be compromised. And, you know, we're ultimately just not here for that long of a fucking time. So like, why would you want a muted experience? Why wouldn't you want to live fullest to yourself? And that doesn't mean you have to, you know, go skydiving and do all these things. It just means showing up as yourself day to day for you and the people around you. And you might lose some friends and you might have some people like, you know, do the whole you changed routine, but ultimately it's more like you are who you think you are. And if you're doing this inner work, you have to realize that some people in your life are always going to try to pull out that same seat at the table for you. And it's the onus is on you to tell them like, no, you're not, you know, I'm pulling out this new seat for myself at the table. And that doesn't have to threaten or fucking compromise my relationship to you, you know, because you might have stuff you want to work on ultimately. And our friendship relationship can ultimately get heightened if we're both supporting each other's growth. And you'll find pretty quick that there's going to be some people who do support that. And maybe, who knows, you positively influence somebody else by living as an example in kind of a Kobe Bryant style way, or there's going to be some people that you turn off. And it sucks, but you know, you kind of have to ultimately be okay with that. And ironically, even though we're talking about life stuff, one of my biggest influences, mentors, and the guy who I came up through and was certified by, Nick Kersan of Speed of Sport, he actually talks about, you know, he jokes, you know why I still hang out with my high school friends? Says, so I can be the nail in life, because we're all just going out in life and we get to be the hammer at some level. But when you hang around the people, what he's really saying is when you hang around the people who want to pull that old seat out for you at the table, who know you when you were that nerd in high school, or who knew you when you know, you had this or that downfall happen before your evolution, you kind of still get reminded of that, and they still treat you like the nail. And that does, I'm not telling everybody to abandon their high school friends. I love my high school friends. They're some of my closest friends. But just being able to like acknowledge that, so that way you don't like fall into these preconditioned patterns and roles